Haters will broadcast your failure, but whisper your success. Hello, and welcome to the Basket Case Immersive on Natalie Ryan. A Basket Case Immersive is a deep dive into the narratives from the previous episode to try and understand what's going on between our ears in those moments. When we shine a light on the human pitfalls of play, you can add action and awareness to your bag of trick shots next tournament. Think of everything you're about to hear as a jumping off point for you to discover what works for you and your own mental game, so take it or leave it. Also, the advice you're about to hear is conversational, not clinical. I'm not a mental health professional or a sports psychologist, but I do strongly believe that if you've ever had your mental game fail you, you're not weird. In fact, you're in good company. Let's get ready to flex our mental muscles and gain momentum. Come on, y'all. First off, I want to thank Natalie for her strength and bravery. It takes guts to live your life authentically, especially when people are shouting you down. I also want to thank all the podcast fans for reaching out to her with support. Thank you for being kind. If you haven't listened to Natalie's episode yet, go and take a listen and then come back to this one. It'll make more sense. The first theme from Natalie's stories I wanted to bring up is in contrast to our Aaron immersive, where Aaron and I both noticed we like being the quote-unquote underdog. Natalie, however, is the opposite. Here's what she said in the episode.
I didn't have to charge from back. I had to kind of hold on and push myself forward to stay ahead. And in my opinion, that's way easier to do than it is to charge for way further back. I don't know why, but whenever I have a lead,
so
I feel like, yeah, because most people think it's the other way. Because like if you're behind, you know exactly how many strokes you have to shoot better than the opponent. Like there is a number in your head when you're behind that you know you have to hit. And when you're ahead, you know that if you just play your game and play well, you should win. If you have the skills, you should just come away with it.
I was really curious about the preferences for offensive versus defensive playing styles and how it applies to disc golf. Even though disc golf doesn't use offense and defense explicitly as many sports do, I thought it was worth exploring and absolutely think both styles of play apply. Some players might prefer offense or actively increasing position and scoring where focus is outward, and some might prefer a style of defense where they are protecting and maintaining position with their focus inward. This also relates to something Eagle talked about in his episode of how he always felt a different kind of motivation in chasing down the win than, say, a Ricky or a Paul with that killer instinct.
One thing I get a lot of pressure from is to be like a Ricky, be like a Paul, keep doing that and have that mentality. But I don't feel like I have that killer drive to win like them sometimes. Like, obviously I want to win, but the way I go about it is more of the more of like a stoic philosophy, focusing on what I can control. And if I put everything in place and do my best, then just by default, I will win. So like, that's more of my mentality. And that's what I found to be the most successful for me. For those listening, I think finding what drives you. If you're a Paul or a Ricky that, you know, you thrive on the pressure and want to go for the win, and you're that kind of cutthroat style athlete.
Yeah, that killer instinct.
Go for it. But if not, then yeah. Like, don't feel pressure. Like there's other ways for you to get it done in your own way.
I found a great article by Sean McCann, PhD, which appeared in the Mind Games section of a U.S. Olympic team newsletter that said, "Offensive skill lets an athlete dominate a competition and lets other athletes know they are a contender. But what about defensive skills, and when and why should we use them? Defensive skill helps athletes succeed consistently and in all conditions. Defensive skills might include an athlete's ability to recover quickly, their capacity to adapt and respond to obstacles on the course, or maintain a winning streak. When athletes' defensive skills are strong, they are consistent performers. They are resilient and easily adapt to changes in their environment. If offensive mental skills are necessary for excellence, athletes need defensive skills to maintain that excellence. Think for a second about your style of play, and off the top of your head, do you know if you're a more offensive or defensive player? When and why do you find yourself using each style? Do you prefer to chase down the leader with a scoring streak in the last round, or do you want to have the lead and maintain it? There will always be situations where you need to clutch up and start scoring to attain the win, and there will always be times when you need to maintain excellence and handle adversity. Knowing your preferred focus is good, but understanding how and when to utilize which style on demand is the key for peak performance. The research notes that we all have a chronic style, which is a style that you use most often, and a momentary style, which can be primed or induced based on the situation you're in. Or maybe you're more of what they call a two-way player who excels at both. In psychology, the function of offense versus defensive styles boils down to something they call regulatory focus theory. Regulatory focus theory is basically the different ways we as humans orient and frame our actions and motivations in order to achieve our goals. The theory proposes that we have two main modes or orientations that we use. For the sake of simplicity, I'm using those terms very loosely grouped, where a defensive playing style represents prevention and assessment qualities, and the offensive style represents promotion and locomotion. They have a nifty questionnaire that they use for research studies that helps measure your attraction to either assessment or locomotion called the Regulatory Mode Questionnaire. I'll drop a link to it and the scoring sheet in the show notes if you're interested to try it out. I filled it out as a test for this episode and found that I do have a preference for locomotion over assessment, or offense versus defense. So how can this help improve your mental game? Knowing I prefer offense maybe explains why I prefer playing more open courses like Aaron rather than heavily wooded courses where I need to play more defensively or adapt frequently to adverse lies and landing zones. I'm not saying that defense is the strategy to use in the woods, but after reflecting on the rounds I played in the woods that I did excel at, I noticed for me they were the ones I had more of a defensive mindset. I realized that most of the time, defense is my default tool for round one. The first round, I'm assessing the competition, my skills, and generally being reactive until the last round when I finally give myself the license and space to attack and go full send. Have you noticed the difference in offense and defense in your play? Which strategy has been more successful for you? Send us your stories by emailing discgolfbasketcase@gmail.com. And if you want to do more research on the topic, I would suggest starting your search with regulatory focus theory. All the sources that I used are linked in the show notes. Next up, something Natalie mentioned about reading her opponents and momentum at OTB.
I was on the card with her. We both tried to throw that, and I succeeded. And I think because I succeeded, it kind of got in her head a little bit. She knew I was charging from there. So seeing that kind of reaction physically from someone, not like verbally or anything, but like noticing that they're a little bit stressed makes it a little easier to kind of focus up and put that extra effort in.
I think the concept of being able to read your opponent's reactions is really important, not for the purpose of manipulation or anything devious, but more in the vein of momentum. Being able to leverage the moments in a round when momentum shifts is vitally important to not only keeping your mental game on track, but ensuring it shifts in your favor. The type of momentum I wanted to cover is psychological momentum. Some psychologists believe that the senses of the physical world and impersonal forces like speed and momentum may be mirrored in our mental inner worlds. Psychologists have begun work on a unifying theory of psychological momentum that begins with the laws of Newtonian physics. Newtonian physics says that momentum equals velocity times mass. In the case of psychological momentum, the velocity part of the equation is provided by an important event. In disc golf, that's usually a big play that turns the tide, like an unexpected 50-foot putt or a drive that gets skinny and parks the basket while your opponent shoots off into the woods. Some event that propels the player forward very quickly. Mass, according to this theory, is provided by the social context. How important was the throw? Is the player emotionally invested in the outcome of this game more than others? Is it their home turf? Did they win last year? A high-profile platform, like getting paid a large contract, trying to reach a milestone win, or being a trans woman in FPO, could qualify as mass, which combines with velocity to fuel the player's psychological momentum. That momentum will either pause or propel them to win or lose. If you keep draining 35-footers and spot your cardmate flinching or running out of gas, your psychological momentum increases, and so do your chances to win. We're going to talk more on psychological momentum and what it can do for you and who it affects most after a quick break. Stay with us. If you're listening to Basket Case, you will likely be getting some new disc golf gear soon. Some of my favorite discs I've owned, I found at infinitediscstour.com. They have pictures of every disc, so you can find a disc that has good vibes and know exactly what you're getting. They carry basically every retailer, so that obscure favorite that just went swimming could be replaced after all. You can also sell them your used or new discs that don't work for your game before you throw them in the water, so someone else can. If you're a TD, their payout and sponsorship options can streamline the whole process for you and allow your winners to get what they want. They do player packs and trophies too. Check out what they can do by going to infinitediscstour.com. That's infinitediscstour.com. Wild Pack Sports wants to help people get outdoors and thrive through adventure, sport, and mindfulness. If you're looking for more control or stamina in stressful situations, their mindfulness sessions can help you develop habits to use on and off the course. Whether you're staring down a 30-footer for the win or surviving a trip to the grocery store with your kids, a lesson on breathwork, mindfulness, or a cold plunge can give you the tools you need to thrive. Sessions can be in person or virtual, so get started today by going to wildpacksports.com. Wild Pack Sports, control the moment, control the outcome. There is a saying in MMA that a fighter is only as good as his last fight. If he loses his last fight, he'll have a harder time winning the next one, and the flip side is also true. He'll be more likely to win if he won his last fight. Winning and losing affect your mental state, which affects your behavior and thus your performance. When you win, you gain psychological momentum, making you more likely to win again. And when you lose psychological momentum, making you more likely to lose again. Also, winning makes you see yourself as a better performer and others as worse. This perception gives you a mental edge. When you beat your competition, you see yourself as superior. And when you see yourself as superior, you're more likely to beat your competition. For some of you guys listening out there, this is pretty common knowledge. Learning to see yourself as superior as a way to help you beat other people at things is not a concept that women practice throughout their lives in the same way that men do. Psychological momentum can be disrupted if you have just won a tournament, but your next one gets canceled or you get injured and cannot train for a while. You have to restart your training without the positive momentum making your performance easier and smoother. Studies have found that deliberate practice explains only 1 to 26% of the variance in human performance. Less than 27%. This means that most of the game is played, besides talent and genetics, by psychology. Winning is not all in your head, but for a large part, it is. Interestingly, the overall positive effect of psychological momentum was greater for male competitors than it was for females. However, it was dependent on experience. The influence of psychological momentum decreased as men's competitive experience increased. So the more experienced they were, the less it mattered. What this says to me is that the high-level male athletes know this tool and use it, probably implicitly, without even realizing. Men looking to level up can use this tool for an edge over men with less experience. For women, the less experienced they were, the less it mattered, meaning psychological momentum was most potent when women were experienced athletes. To me, this says that most women aren't doing this inherently, whether from nature, nurture, or a combination. So employing the tool of psychological momentum might give you an edge in competing against other FPO women. So what can you do about it? Start paying attention to your mass and velocity each round. Do you play better in tournaments that mean a lot to you personally? How can you replicate that motivation or manufacture it for ones you don't have as much skin in the game? Do you have a signature putt or throw that has shifted momentum for you in the past? Maybe it's draining 30-footers when you know your opponent isn't a strong putter. Maybe it's a get-out-of-jail-free tomahawk trick shot, or maybe a very sneaky hyzer flip you use in the woods. Practice that and use it to gain velocity in a round. Next time you feel the momentum shifting in your favor, the best advice is to ride that wave as long and as much as possible. With psychological momentum, basically all your wins and successes compound into more wins and more success. So the best recipe is to start winning and keep winning. Easier said than done. And after a win, feel like the $1,000,000 that you are. You earned it, and you should feel, per the research, better than everyone. Use that high to translate into working harder, and again, ride that wave. At your next tournament, translate that confidence into the knowledge that you can and will win again. When you lose, it's a lot harder, especially if you had high velocity or mass events that give that loss more negative momentum. Do whatever it takes to gain your self-confidence back. Go to some smaller tournaments, take your family out, take beginners out, and practice learning how to win again. You'll have to find other ways to intrinsically motivate yourself to keep going, train harder, and not lose confidence and belief in yourself and your abilities. If you do, you'll end up repeating those mistakes and maybe even making a habit of losing. Maybe adopt an underdog mindset, especially next time you face down the same opponent or play the same course that incurred the loss. And always, always focus on as many positives as you can. Which leads us to our next topic. Positivity and dealing with hate. Natalie deals with a lot of hate, and it's really, really, really hard not to let that affect your mental game. Here's what she said in the episode.
The biggest one has to be Worlds this year. I was geared up, ready to play. And for whatever reason, I could not get the online hate and messages out of my head that weekend. I don't know why. Usually I'm better about it than that week. I don't know. It just kind of stuck with me. Every round, I was like halfway through the course thinking about some comment someone posted or some message they sent me that I shouldn't have read in the first place.
Dealing with haters and hateful comments, especially online, is something most people with any relative success face at some point. It's the flip side that no one anticipates when they imagine becoming famous or gaining a following. And it's something most professional disc golfers deal with in some capacity. I don't want to pretend like I'm an expert here. I have zero idea what it's like to deal with hate, especially at the level that Natalie deals with, and I hope I never do. The best advice I found was the following. First, anticipate the hate. This is basically that hate is gonna hate, and sooner or later it will happen to you. If you accept this as fact, you can turn that anticipation of when it's going to happen into power and not let the hate take you by surprise or throw you off your game when it happens. It sounds like a little bit of a downer, but accepting that some people will hate you no matter what you do is a fact of life, like bad weather. And knowing that it will happen allows you to depersonalize it and process it and move through it more objectively. Next is to not engage. The guy in this video's policy was really clear. He does not negotiate with haters. As soon as he reads a hateful message, instead of trying to argue, defend, or validate yourself to the hater, he blocks, removes, reports, whatever. Then argue, defend, and validate yourself to yourself. Reassure yourself with all the reasons why what you're doing is important, valid, and worth doing, so you can properly process the exposure you just had to that hate without it leaving an unwanted impression on you. And lastly, role model positivity and good values, which is a lot easier said than done because our brains are hardwired to concentrate on hate and negativity over positivity. It's what's called a negativity bias, and basically, it's that our emotions are not created equal. Negativity bias states that things of a more negative nature, thoughts of missing your putt, feeling like a loser, or reading hateful messages, have a greater effect on your mental well-being than positive things. They are, in short, just stickier. Negativity is essentially a magnet that attracts our cognitive attention. Our brains are hardwired to see, think about, and remember negative experiences, all with the purpose to aid us in survival and protect us from future harm. At least that's how it was when we were running away from tigers. Our brains depended on these hardwired tips and tricks for thousands of years to keep us alive, and they haven't really had the time to catch up to the world we live in today. For most people in developed, affluent societies, like most disc golfers, negativity bias is no longer a survival mechanism, it's a handicap. And that's especially true when it comes to your mental game. We have to train our brains manually to refill the half-empty glass. Fortunately, our brain's innate neuroplasticity makes it possible for us to rewire ourselves toward the good and become more attuned to positive emotions over negative ones. The first step is noticing how and why you become negative, then retrain your brain. Training your amygdala to notice positive moments over negative ones involves both interrupting your negative patterns when they start, plus embedding positive focal points. Aaron talked about this and did this really, really well. Over time, the brain will begin to catch itself naturally when it starts to spiral. I also saw some things like positivity journals, daily affirmations, and mindfulness techniques. And most importantly, be kind. Everyone you meet has something that's digging at them. That's it for the show today, guys. Time to read some listener sends. The first one is from Eric Rodriguez. He said, "Listened to episode 1 two nights ago. Good stuff. We'll definitely be tuning in. One thing I heard as a fan is to be careful. Even our best intentions as fans to encourage the players can sometimes trigger emotions, good and bad. I'm glad something like this is happening at this time in disc golf. I believe you all as pros are still approachable and can help shape how we as fans treat our athletes. The major sports are already so cutthroat and cold. It's what have you done for me lately out there? And I think this show will help us as fans learn not only how to manage our emotions on the course, but also an insight to how the athletes are feeling and that they are also human and deserve our empathy and respect regardless of the outcome on the course. Thanks again to you and Eagle for a great episode." Thank you, Eric. So glad you're a fan. The next one is from Colin Shorey. Had an awesome photo of this disc, so we'll repost that photo on our Instagram. Colin said, "Zoe Andike did a podcast and talked about these points. 1, I will trust myself and my stroke every shot. 2, I will execute my pre-shot routine. 3, I will stay in the present moment. 1 shot, 1 thought." Love that. 4, I will accept bad breaks and mistakes and be tough in adversity. 5, I'm going to be in a good mood and enjoy my entire round today. 6, I will trust in my instincts and be decisive and committed. 7, I will get looser and freer and more confident as the round moves on. He said, my brother listened to the podcast and wrote them all down on the back of a Thunderbird. When I went to visit him, he put it in the room I was staying in, and it's been in my bag ever since. It helps to center me, especially before larger tournaments. Colin. So cool. Thank you so much, Colin. If you, like Colin or Eagle, have a mantra or a contract that you read before your rounds, tell us about it. That's so interesting. And I definitely want to work up something like that for me to do before my rounds in 2023. As always, sources from this episode are linked in the show notes, so check it out. Thank you so much for listening. And until next time, no guts, no glory, no brains, no chains. Bye, guys.
What I would say is just be kind. Be kind to everyone on the course. It doesn't matter what they look like, who they are, where they come from. They deserve to be there just as much as you do. And if you're gonna play the game, then everyone should be able to play the game with you.